Welcome to An Epiphany with Tiffany. My name is Tiffany, and I've just had an epiphany. This podcast is all about Christian singles looking for community. Christian dating can be quite a mess these days. I'll share stories from my guests and practical tips for successful love. Dating shouldn't be this hard, right? So grab your favorite snack or drink and curl up with this episode, and you might just have an epiphany of your own. Cool. All right. So let's just start at the beginning because this question is huge. A lot of my guy friends personally have asked me this, and I hear it from all, I've heard it from so many different individuals that this is such an important thing to them. So, you know, like if your guy is having a rough day, like what does that look like to you? Do you want him to tell you? Do you feel like it's weak for him to tell you? How does that play out for you?
I'd want him to tell me. I don't take it as a sign of weakness, or I don't take it as a sign of, you know, I'm rescuing him by any stretch of the imagination. I'm taking that as, this is called partnership and communication. And you can't partner well with someone if you don't fully know what's going on with them. And also, you know, as you know, we're looking, I would hope, you know, the community is looking to build godly, you know, relationship. How do I know how to pray for you if I don't know what's going on with you? If I don't know that something, you know, has affected you and all of that, because, you know, if we really believe that, you know, we have an enemy who's out to get us, he's going to throw things at us. And oftentimes, you know, we spend, 70-80% of our lives at our jobs. And so that's primarily where we're probably going to be attacked. So I don't see it as weakness of like, hey, if you're having a really hard time with your boss or this client or a fellow coworker or something, it's like, well, that's then how I can like know how to pray for you, and know how to partner. And so, when you just shut down and don't say anything, it's not helpful. And I think a lot of guys are afraid then girls might turn it into fix it mode. And I'm not looking to fix it for you. I'm just looking to know like, well, what's going on? Like, you know, and if, you know, I've had guy friends or even previous relationships, like, well, I just don't want to talk about it right now. Okay. But at some point, can we revisit it? Otherwise, it just feels like you're hiding all these things from me. And, you know, to me, that's not a relationship. I've had enough of relationships where it ended up like, because they didn't say something, it really did turn into hindsight of like, oh, you were hiding all these things. You weren't being authentic or 100% in the relationship.
Right. That's like, those are some great points right there. I'm already like, yay. That the aspect of, you know, we spend so much time at our job, right? Like in whatever that job is, you know, is going to add pressure to that relationship. And if you can't open up about that, myself included, like I'm saying everybody, like if you can't be open about what you're struggling with within that stuff that's kind of outside your relationship, then what's the point of being in that relationship? You know, like that's the partnership, like you said. So that was good. I love that. there was something else you said too. Hang on, brain. Not just the vulnerability, but the like the spiritual warfare aspect of it too. Like that is huge. I feel like just from personal experience, a lot of people don't give enough credit to the spiritual warfare aspect of life. You know, it's just kind of like the, okay, yeah, we know that that happens, but it's not really that big of a deal. And I'm like, but it is a huge deal.
Right.
You know, and so that's like perfect to be able to kind of open up that line of communication and be like, well, this is how I want to battle. You know what I mean? Because we have to battle against that. And so that was perfect. I don't know if you have anything else that you want to like kind of touch on with communication, because I know that was a couple of the questions too. And that's huge for me. Communication is like utmost. So
yeah, I mean, my biggest thing is just communication, and I hate being ignored. So you know, that looks like, I understand we're busy. I understand, like, I've had friends or even someone I previously was like kind of talking to, you know, they couldn't have their phone with them all the time. So I understand, like, I might not hear from you all day because you just can't. Like, I have friends in the military where it's like they go into skiffs and things and they can't, you know, actually have their phone on them. So I understand, you know, you might not be able to get back to me like in as timely of a fashion as I would like. Mm-hmm. But when you just ignore something I've asked or even me responding to something you said for days, like that to me communicates that you don't actually care about me. Mm-hmm. So it's not a neediness. It's a, oh, I'm not a priority to you. And that's even in friendship where mm-hmm. like, I don't hear from someone for 4 or 5 days and I'm like, okay, so clearly our friendship is not a priority to you. Cause if I was, you could quickly just shoot me back a message. You know, it's not like I'm asking for, you know, a 10-minute phone conversation. I'm just, you know, quick, like text back to answer me. That's all I'm really asking for. Mm-hmm. And so I think, I don't know then if guys take that as, or maybe they're like, well, I don't have an answer. I'm like, well, then at least say that, because just saying nothing makes me go, you alive? Like, are you just ignoring me? Like what? Just give me a context here so mm-hmm. I know where to go. Because especially like being older and dating and stuff, like if someone's not getting back to me or whatever, you're quickly going to find yourself on the, I'm not talking to you anymore. Like I don't have time to waste to chase mm-hmm. after you and kind of deal with your maybe mood swings or you coping with things. I'm like, look, if you don't have time or you don't want to invest in something, then I'm not going to bend over backwards either, because, you know, I have my own life and work and friendships and such. And, you know, if I want to build a partnership with someone, I'm not waiting around for 5 years for them to like finally feel comfortable or safe to talk to me. I'm like, if you don't feel that, then, you know, not to be harsh, but I'm kind of like, well, then go to therapy, go to counseling, deal with whatever is causing that, and then come back to like wanting a relationship. Mm-hmm. And I say that because of my own life and just brief, we don't have to get into a huge aspect of it, but like I was in a severe accident 7 years ago. And so the healing journey I've walked through and all of that, both physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, you know, I did the hard work. So I can say that in a little bit more of like an aggressive, if you will, manner, going like, no, this is coming from someone who's like had to do it, not from just someone who's whining because, you know, mm-hmm. all these guys have been just, you know, mean to her or something. I'm like, no, I went through it. So, yeah, you know, yeah.
That, like, you bring up such a great point. I feel like so many, I'm going to overgeneralize, and I hate to overgeneralize, but you know, it is what it is. So yeah. Many current like millennial Christians, mm-hmm. we don't put enough emphasis on our own healing. Like mm-hmm. it's because I've been there too. Like I'm currently in therapy and doing all the work too. So it's like, you know, but it took me a long time to get here. Like I'm going to be 34. I feel like I should have done this in my 20s, but I didn't. You know what I mean? But I still had to get to that point. And so now that I'm going through it, I'm like, everybody needs therapy. But just in the aspect of like, God has used it to heal so much of me that I didn't even realize was a problem. And I don't think mm-hmm. I would have made those connections any other way. You know, because there's something that happens when you can sit there and freely talk to somebody. There's no judgment. You know, they're not directly connected to you in any other way except for that session. You know what I mean? So you can just be open and honest and share all the nitty gritty of things. Right. And then you mm-hmm. start to make those connections and realize, oh, well, I'm hurt about this because of this, though. You know, and like this other situation that I was holding on to, it's really this problem over here, you know? And so I think that also goes back to like the spiritual warfare aspect, like, cause there's all that stuff that gets said or, you know, in culture and like whatever, cause the enemy is real and he is very good at making mm-hmm. us feel like we aren't worth it, you know? And like, and God can't love you because you did this. Right. And so, yeah. You know, all those kinds of things, but anyway, I think we as a generation really struggle to realize that there is so much freedom when you start to do the deep healing, because uh-huh. there's so many things that, again, millennials as a generation as a whole went through, like that we probably mm-hmm. don't even like make the connections with, you know, and stuff. And each of our circumstances are different. But, you know, I'm just talking like there's mm-hmm. like the stuff with like 9/11, you know, like I'm just kind of pulling like those big traumatic things that all right. millennials had to deal with, you know, and like mm-hmm. you don't realize that that kind of stuff affects you, you know, farther down the road with like decision making and stuff like that. But anyway, I'll stop ranting about that. But
no, it's fine. No, the biggest, one of the biggest things I like realized, so before I went to graduate school, I was teaching at another university, a theater, because that's what my background is in. And oh, okay. I was making a reference. I was teaching theater appreciation, and something came up, and I was referencing The Lion King as something, and I had to stop because something happened. I was like, oh my gosh, all the kids sitting in front of me, they weren't even born when The Lion King came out. Like, it was this thing of like, oh my God, like I feel old. Like at the time I wasn't even 30, but I was like, I'm old.
Yep.
Like y'all weren't even born when this like huge movie for so many of us came out, you know? I was like, oh my gosh.
It's so weird to me because I have that all the time. Like my nephew is going to be 20 in a few short weeks.
Oh wow.
And yeah, we were all a little young when he was born, but you know, so it's so funny to me because he's only 4 years younger than our youngest brother. And yes. So they're more like siblings than like, mm-hmm. you know, uncle, nephew, right? And so
yeah.
It's so funny to see how like my siblings and I that are older, like how we mm-hmm. function, right? Because we're all older millennials. And then
right.
you have our youngest brother who's right on that cusp of like millennial Gen Z, right? And then mm-hmm. my nephew is fully Gen Z. And so it's just like this weird thing, you yeah. know, because like my nephew in particular, you know, he grew up with us for the first few years of his life. And so, you know, we have a different connection with him than like a normal aunt and uncle, you know, and nephew relationship, mm-hmm. right? And so he, even though he is clearly Gen Z, he very much represents a millennial. And it's just so weird to see that transition, right? Mm-hmm. And then we all grew up in the, you know, computer age, and right, like in, but kids now, they literally have a computer right here. You know what I mean? And it's just yeah. like, you know, so all those things are like play roles too in like how you know, we see things, how we've interacted, like how spiritual warfare comes into play with social media and mm-hmm. all that stuff. Like I feel bad for the younger generation. Well, you don't know the simplicity of having to like dial somebody's phone number on a landline.
Right. And hoping, you know, they would pick up, or, you know,
yeah,
or their parent answered and you had to be like, oh, can I talk to so-and-so?
Mm-hmm. Or you got the busy signal because they were online.
Uh-huh.
It's just so weird to me to see that kind of stuff. But I feel like Gen Z, for the most part, are a little bit more aware as far as like the things that, some of the things that play a role in how like stuff affects them, like society wise, mm-hmm. you know. And I think that has to do with, because it was such a huge transition for all of us, like everything happened so fast from like late 80s to through the 90s, early 2000s, right? It was just like mm-hmm. this huge boom. And I feel like that spiritual warfare stuff like was just insane. I look back on it now and I'm all, mm-hmm. how did we survive all of that? And no wonder we have issues with dating. You know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's crazy. But anyway, that's another rant for another day. Mm-hmm. Okay. Actually, that kind of ties into, what's your biggest struggle with currently dating?
There are no options. So yeah, there are no options. You know, and that sounds like rude. And you know, I always jokingly say, I was like, someone should have married me in my 20s. Cause mm-hmm. I feel like I'm the reverse of a lot of girls. Like in their 20s, right? They had that long list of things that guys had to look like this and be this and this. And I was like, in my 20s, my list was very short. Like mm-hmm. pretty much as long as you were like a guy and a Christian, that was kind of the extent of it. You know, like if you've looked at all the different guys I've like either dated, been interested in, like I don't have a type. And so I'm like, some guy should have married me in my 20s. This would be a lot easier. Versus now in my 30s, my list of things has grown. obviously it's grown in character and stuff, but it's also grown in like what I want someone to look like, what I want them to, you know, be engaged in and involved with. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in your 30s, I mean, yeah, it's a lot harder to meet someone, you know, when you're in your 20s, typically you're in college. And so you have a lot of people your age that you're like running into. Mm-hmm. And then as you get into your career and into your 30s and 40s, like, you know, your social circle just gets smaller. And, you know, we have less energy. So it's not like you're gung-ho to necessarily keep trying groups and popping here and there everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for me to kind of tailor it back to you, if you get away from online dating and all of that, you know, my biggest issue is really with the churches in America, because for, again, you look at their people's actions, not their words. So the mm-hmm. actions are, there is no group for us. There's not an emphasis put on it. We oftentimes aren't given the same ability to lead in churches. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because they, I don't know if they're scared or intimidated, or maybe I think it's more a fear thing of like, oh, well, you know, like, what if I put this single Christian woman doing this, like, you know, married guys are going to be tempted. And I'm like, okay, first of all, like, let's have a little more faith in both her character and their character. And, yeah. and that, you know, inappropriate relationships aren't going to develop. And so I think there needs to be a better space for singles who are in their 30s and 40s, you know, who are Christians, to meet others in their church or in local churches. Right. Because there are probably not that many of us per church who are single. So churches, rather than being so like, well, our church is the best, get together, form one big group of singles who are in their 30s and 40s to get people to meet, you know, and maybe find something. Otherwise, like, I know a lot of the single Christians where I'm at, they end up church hopping, which yep. ends up really being church shopping, because they're mm-hmm. shopping for a mate. And I'm like, well, that's not helpful. You know, if we're supposed to be plugged into the body of Christ and building relationships and serving, then, you know, when you've been somewhere 2-3 years and you're like, well, I've met everyone and there's no one available for me, so here, let me go try this church over here, because maybe, you know, the menu is different over here. So
yeah, no, you make a great point. And I think that's why I gravitate towards the Facebook groups, because at least there's some level of community there. Obviously, you're not necessarily getting to meet everybody in person. But, you know, like when we, because my church is the same way, we have a very small population of younger-ish Christian singles, right? And then, but there's very few of us. I mean, most of the ones that are there are like in their 20s. There's very few of us that are in our 30s and 40s. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, we're still out here on the outskirts, you know, and yeah. I'm just kind of like, okay. And I did the church hopping thing for a while, just trying, not yeah. solely to try and find somebody, but to just see if, like, is this home church of mine that I've been at forever, you know, where I want to stay, right? Mm-hmm. But it's still just like it's a struggle, because every church I went to is the same way, at least here in California, you know? And so I'm just yeah. kind of like, why is this a thing? Like, I don't understand why churches don't make more of an effort to, you know, make those connections with people. And mm-hmm. yeah, so anyway, I could rant about that for a very long time. but yeah, it's just like, so you've lived in Colorado your whole life, or?
No. So okay. I'm actually from SoCal.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, from SoCal. Went to graduate school in Florida, the University of Florida. And then because of the accident. Yeah, because the accident I was in ended up in Colorado Springs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I've been here 6 years. Or 6.5 years. And that's a whole story with God of like, can I leave?
Yeah.
So, we'll see if God's going to open that door anytime soon or not. But yeah. Okay. So Southern California is, you know, definitely spent, you know, my whole childhood and then into my 20s, a good chunk of my 20s in SoCal. So
yeah, that's where I am. It's a great place to be, but I also want out. So I'm just waiting for God to open the right door. Nice. I'm like, please, like daily. Can it be today? Not that I could literally move today, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Can we start this process, please? Mm-hmm. But, you know, I know that I'm here for a specific reason, and like, the timing, it's just waiting until I can get out of here.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know it'll happen eventually because it's something, it's one of those things where, you know, I tend to pray, like, if this isn't something that you want, like, please take the desire away. Right. And the desire mm-hmm. has never left. And so I'm like, okay, at some point it's going to happen. I just have to be patient and wait for it. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's cool though that you were born and raised here and stuff. Did you like living in Florida or
no? No. I was there because of grad school. That was it.
Okay. So,
yeah.
Okay. Because I have a lot of friends in Florida. They're like, move here, and I'm all different humidity. I don't know.
Right. No, I mean, it wasn't bad. I mean, you know, the University of Florida is in Gainesville, and pretty much the only reason that town exists and anyone knows it exists is because of the university. So there's nothing else to do. You know, the whole town, any shops that are there, business, all of that is to support the university. Mm. So especially coming from SoCal, where, you know, you have museums and you have amazing restaurants and so much ethnic food and like real ethnic food, you know, so it's like the swap of like, yeah, no, you know.
Yeah.
And people would, like one time I was out visiting Southern California and hanging out with a friend. And so he lived in Santa Ana. And so we went from Santa Ana and we went wine tasting in Temecula. We then shot all the way back up to, Marina Del Rey to go to my favorite restaurant that's up there. And then ended up at, Griffith Park Observatory. And I was explaining this to people and they're like, you did all that in one day? I was like, yeah,
yeah,
that's normal. And so, you know, that to me is just a funny part of like, I guess if you're not from a big metropolitan area, mm-hmm. you know, you're just like, oh my gosh, you did what? And I was like, oh, it's just normal.
Yep. But yep. I've told people that I've been to the snow in Big Bear and then ended uh-huh. the day at the beach with a yeah. bonfire. And mm-hmm. it's not that bad. Like if you leave at the right time, you don't hit traffic.
Right.
You know, and then we just stayed until the traffic was gone and then drove back home. So mm-hmm. they were like, are you serious? And I was like, yeah, we literally packed our snow gear and our bathing suits and sweatshirts, of mm-hmm. course, you know, yeah. because it was going to get cold at the beach.
Right.
But not as cold as the snow. So, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like we drove up in the yeah. morning, played in the snow for a little bit, and then we're like, eh, let's go down to the beach. So then we grabbed we packed our lunch. We ate our lunch on the way down to the beach and then hung out mm-hmm. for a few hours, had a bonfire and watched the sunset and then came home. And I'm like, yeah, that's just a typical Monday in California. That's cool, though. That sounds like a fun day. I haven't mm-hmm. done I can't remember if I've actually ever been to the Griffin or Griffith before. I don't remember. I might have when I was younger, but everybody keeps telling me I need to go. And so I'm like, yeah, I know, but that means going into LA. But anyway, that's so cool, though, because I feel like that kind of plays a role for me too, like where I'm thinking about like ending up, you know, like obviously I'm mm-hmm. I would be okay with less of that, but it's still I want to be close enough to something like some kind mm-hmm. of city-ish area where we could do some of that kind of stuff. But I'm also totally cool with being in the backwoods and nobody ever speaking to me again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's so kind of it's funny how like the places you grow up can really shape that part of what you want in your future. So, ooh, you have a good point for the what does spiritual maturity look like to you question, because I agree. I mean, I like the question in the sense that, you know, it can get like a base foundation, you know, but that's mm-hmm. like there's different levels because we're all going to be at a different, you know, level at different points in our lives, right? Because we're going to face different things. And so, mm-hmm. yeah. But anyway, if you want to kind of like expand on that, that would be cool. Like your thoughts and feelings.
Sure. So I guess unofficially wrestled with this question, you know, just internally to a degree, because, you know, people say, well, you want to marry someone who's spiritually mature. And I'm always kind of like, okay, what the heck does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I feel like there is this implication that, you know, saying someone who's spiritually mature, you're saying like, well, you want to marry someone who's like Peter or Paul, And I'm like, okay, first of all, we don't really know what they were like, right? We just have the letters they wrote in the early church and early documents. And culturally, what men did in that society, how they provided, is very different than today, just from like an anthropological sense.
Yes.
Not to discredit that and not saying we shouldn't, you know, take principles, but I'm like, okay, what does that mean? You know? And I don't think it's as easy to say like, well, if so-and-so is from this denomination, then no, I wouldn't marry them. Or, you know, if they don't believe this or they do believe this, because I'm like, that's just so hard. Or saying like, well, someone has to have, you know, scripture memorized. I'm like, okay, well, some people are just really bad at remembering things, like, you know, but maybe they're really awesome prayer warriors. Like, so I don't think there's like some cookie cutter mold per se. But you know, and I always look at it as like, who am I to judge someone else's relationship with God? I think it matters, like, if they say they're a Christian, what is the fruit coming out of their life? Like, what does their life actually look like versus just what are they saying? You know, because I also know some guys who, you know, they were in Awanas, and so they can, you know, quote every single verse and all this stuff. And it's like, but if you look at their life, it's spiritually empty or dead, or they have massive struggles with other things. Not to judge people, but to go, you can't just go, well, they fit this mold, so therefore that's what spiritual maturity is. I think it's a developing thing. And I think to put the onus too, so it's not just all on the men, also like women, what is spiritual maturity mean for us? You know, yeah, you could give the quip of like, oh, just be a Proverbs 31 woman. Like, okay, well, what does that really look like in, you know, 2023? But, you know, if you're just looking for a guy to lead, like, we're all saved individually. Like, we have a personal relationship with God. So what does spiritual maturity look like in your relationship with God? And I think as you continue to develop your spiritual maturity and you press in and find out what God has for you and what he's speaking to you, and how he's developing your character, then I think what a spiritually mature guy looks like is going to become clearer to you. Because I think a lot of women are just searching for like, well, a spiritually mature guy, because then he'll lead me and I don't have to do this work. And it's like, no, you still got to do your own work with God. Like, your relationship, your salvation isn't based on your husband. It's based on your relationship with Jesus, and all of that. So I think the more you turn in and do the hard work of developing your own relationship with God, and your relationship with each member of the Trinity, then what you're looking for in a partner, you know, spiritually will become clearer to you, and like what you need and what's important, or what are things to work on together, or what are red flags. So.
Amen. I wholeheartedly agree. I was talking to one of the ladies last night, and I was saying, like, I have been looking back at myself in my 20s and looking at myself now in my mid 30s, and like reminding myself that even though I didn't, quote, get married at 22, like everybody said I should, you know what I mean? That's a whole thing. But anyway, the young Tiffany then, like, and the Tiffany now, like, if I had married the person back in the day that I thought I needed and all of that, like, I don't know if we would be making it right now, to be honest, because of where I am in my own personal journey. And because I'm speaking about somebody in particular, you know what I mean? But obviously there's still the possibility that we both could have grown together and, you know, and done all that stuff. But just looking at myself now, that person that he was, I definitely don't see myself being able to continue to build something with, if that makes sense. Like, the, you know, the maturity of my own relationship is like with God is just so much different than back then, because I was looking for different things. So the whole point of like you or me growing into that relationship myself, like seeing different qualities and different guys, is like, okay, yeah, this is more what I need now versus like my young 22-year-old self thinking that, oh, he's fine, he'll make it work, we'll be okay. And then no, it's just, there's no way that would have been a thing. But again, it's just, I love the point of being able to grow in and of yourself, because it's true. I feel like society, Christian society, and maybe this is partly like purity culture stuff, but like, the view of what a marriage looks like. You know, it was really, at least in my experience, it was really said that, you know, oh, after you get married, like basically you don't have to do any work anymore. Like he's the lead of the family and like mm-hmm. everything falls on him and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, it's not accurate, you know? So
yeah.
I don't know if you have any like thoughts on that, but
yeah. So, I mean, I do, you know, I grew up, you know, in some semblance of purity culture and all of that. And, you know, heard the whole, you know, the husband leads and all this and he provides, you know, financially, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And I sat there and I, you know, really, I mean, I was always very career driven and such of, you know, just, you know, the dream was never just, you know, grow up, get married, pop out kids and be a stay at home wife. Just not my dream. Nothing wrong with it. Just was never a desire in my heart. And so what I've looked at, you know, when people say, well, the husband's supposed to provide and stuff. And I go, okay, well, what happened? Does life happen? You know, no one could have predicted the you know, really bad motorcycle accident I was in. Mm-hmm. And like, I looked at, you know, how long it's taken me to recover and all these things and going, you know, you never know. So it's like, what if you're married to someone and they get in a major car accident or they have an accident at work and they can no longer physically, you know, even walk on their own or shower themselves or all these things. And so now you've become their caretaker and kind of you're now in a place of, you know, you're kind of the big financial provider in some capacity just because they can't. So I look at that going, you know, we as Christian women, we can't just go, oh, well, this is what it looks like. I think mm-hmm. it's a question of going like, not to put fear in anyone's heart, men or women, but going like, I think the way we've kind of thought about this, or it still feels like we kind of have to hang on to like the 1950s, you know, with certain things and going, no, we can still take the biblical principles of like a man leading and what that means, and kind of look at it within the context that we're living today, with, you know, the changes in society, you know, just even looking at like, okay, back in the 70s, I think there were still some states, or I can't remember if it was the whole US, like a woman couldn't even have her own banking account. She couldn't mm-hmm. legally have her own banking account, you know, and now we can, and we can have 401ks and, you know, we can have stocks and all this kind of stuff. So not to put forth this kind of independent feminism, but to look at and go, okay, how has the world changed? And so the truth of the word hasn't changed, but how do you kind of partner the two together? You know, and because, you know, we don't have to get married as women, right? We can have our own bank accounts. We aren't either dependent on like a father or a husband. You know, I think that's made women more cautious to get married, or more picky maybe. And then, you know, I am sure it's had ramifications on the guy's side. And so as you're looking, as you're getting older as a female, like not that you don't want to get married, but you're also looking at the reality of like, okay, but I'm not, so I have to provide for my future because if no, you know, guy ever shows up, what am I going to do? You know, and if you do have a great relationship with your dad, you know, unfortunately, he's not going to be around for forever. Or if mm-hmm. you don't have a great relationship with your dad, then you're really in this place of going, okay, I have to provide for myself. So I think there's that tension that we have to sit in more so and figure that out.
Yeah. I mean, that was liquid gold. I love the way that you just like kind of went off on that. That was great. See, because like for me, I have always thought that I was going to grow up, be a stay-at-home mom, all the things, right? And again, mm-hmm. I didn't get married when I was younger. And so now I'm over here in the boat of like, I got to figure things out. And like, you know, I went the undergrad and grad school route, like, you know, and all that stuff too. And so it's just been like, now I have to figure out what this looks like. Not that I would ever expect my husband to have paid for that, but you know what I mean? Like the, I made these choices and like, I'm still not married. So now I still have to continue to figure out how I'm providing for myself and what that looks like for me. And, you know, and I want to be a stay-at-home mom, but the job that I'm in now, like I can literally do that. you know, I can still, quote, work from home and be a stay-at-home mom and still be able to kind of help provide in that aspect, you know. And so that is something that's nice that I feel like has come out of all the other crazy things that have happened the last few years, you know. But it's just, you're right, like in today's society, like how do we still honor what the marriage can look like and, you know, in our own roles biblically, but also still kind of fit within what society is kind of making us fit into, you know, as far as like financial stuff, because the majority of the United States, it's heck of expensive and you can't function on mm-hmm. one income, you know, especially in California.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's just like, what does that look like? You know, and there's nothing to say that a guy can't solely provide financially, but there's still different levels of providing, you know, with like in each role, I feel like, because like mm-hmm. as a mom, you know, you're providing, nurturing, like you're doing all these other things. It's still a level of providing. It's just in a different way than how your husband is doing it. So anyway. Okay. Oh, so you were an MK? You were a missionary's kid? That's cool.
Yeah, that was the first part of my life. My parents were in YWAM, Youth with a Mission. So the first, we moved to the base when I was 3 and we left when I was 7. So basically the first, you know, set of years of my life that I remember, we were at a YWAM base. And so, you know, I've got that influence. And then, you know, my dad was always, very interested in culture. He, has his master's in ethnodramatology, which is studying other cultures, artistic forms in terms of dramatic dance, theater, mm-hmm. mime, etc., and then understanding that culture's artistic expressions to then use their way of communicating artistically to communicate a message. So you're specifically creating a dance or a drama or something using their culture versus just bringing Western arts to them. Mm-hmm. And so yeah,
that's really cool. We have some YWAM missionaries in our church too. So we, their whole family have been in it forever. So like is the mom and the dad, and then they have 5 kids. And then now their oldest is doing it herself. And so, you know, it's really, really cool because she's elsewhere, you know, but it's been really awesome to like kind of grow up in the same church with them and just, you know, be able to pick their brain. Obviously they can't tell us everything because of where they were serving and all that, but you know, it's just, it's cool. Like it's a really awesome ministry. And, you know, I never felt like I needed to get involved into that in particular, but I feel like more people need to, just because it's such a huge, huge way to minister to the different cultures, you know, and you have to mm-hmm. kind of, when you're going into that different group of people, that you really have to get on their level. Otherwise it's not gonna, you know, correlate. So mm-hmm. that's really, really cool though. Cause now I'm just curious. I mean, I guess you could just tell me, the question was talking about like, how important is it to you that your future person is like involved in ministry? I just can't find it now.
That's okay. Yes. Involved. I'm trying to think like, I mean, involved in their church so that they're, you know, serving and planting, like, yeah. But again, you know, I don't have a preconceived notion of like, well, you got to be serving at least like every Sunday or, you know, twice a month or doing that, like just being involved, like, yes. You know, but at the same time, like I have friends and different things who are involved in, what I would say is ministry that's outside the church. So they don't necessarily serve at the church, but they, you know, maybe they mentor at the Boys and Girls Club, or they, you know, work with veterans, or they maybe do other resources for people who are getting over addictions or have severe trauma in their background. And so even though sometimes those entities aren't necessarily Christian, you know, they're not a Christian organization who's running it, I don't discount that as going like, oh, well, you do that, but like, you're not serving in church or you're not doing this. I'm like, well, that's still a ministry, because I would hope that they're bringing Christ into those situations. Maybe they can't overtly talk about Christ, but hopefully people, by how they present themselves and such, recognize that they're different and they have a different like spirit and presence about them. And hopefully it does lead to conversations about, you know, Christ and, you know, why maybe they have peace or why they have joy, and all of that. So, you know, probably, I guess the big thing from this interview is like, you know, I don't have a lot of cookie cutter ideas about, you know, what's got to look like this and it's got to look like this, because I've watched, you know, things for the last like 35 years in the church and going like, well, cookie cutter hasn't really served us very well. So let's throw out the molds and take the principles and then, you know, look for something that complements that versus just having this very strict, rigid structure of like, well, if it doesn't look like this, then, you know, no, I'm not interested.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I agree. The, like you said, the cookie cutter molds are just not, they're not doing us any good. And I, that kind of ties into, I'm sure you've seen it in the group, like the conversations where, you know, some of the guys will be like, oh, well, you only want this. Right. And then I'm like, okay, well, that's a lie straight from the enemy's mouth, because the majority of us don't want that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And there's nothing wrong with wanting certain things. Like there isn't. Uh-huh. It's just stop overgeneralizing both sides of the coin, you know, like,
yeah,
assuming that women only want six figures, you know, whatever, uh-huh, and or 6 foot. And I'm like, no, that's not what I like at all. I mean, I do like it, right. Yes, but that's not what I'm going for.
Yeah.
You know, and then to like also overgeneralize on the other side of like, oh, you know, guys only want like a size 2, you know, like whatever, like pick a number. And mm-hmm, it's just like, that's also not accurate. And I feel like that is still a lie straight from the enemy's mouth, in the sense that it puts too much emphasis on the outward and not enough emphasis on that person as a spiritual being and like their walk and, you know, the way that they can complement you in the future, because God only knows what's going to happen, you know. And I feel like that is where like our different partners can come in. And mm-hmm, because we don't know, like you said earlier too, like we don't know what the future is going to hold, you know, as far as like our lives or our husband's lives are concerned. And I want somebody that I know is going to be there no matter what, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And like the first instinct disorder and health are better for worse, you know what I mean? Like that is very important. And I think when we as a society focus too much on, you know, believing those lies, that the overgeneralization and lies of that kind of cultural norm, it takes the beauty out of getting to know somebody that, you know, mm-hmm, could really be such a huge benefit for you later on the road. Cause you don't know, like we have no idea. We just hope we choose right. Mm-hmm. You know, but then that's where prayer and counsel come in also. So anyway, I don't know if you have any other like last minute thoughts. If not, totally cool. I just appreciate your time. This was great.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate you, you know, taking the time to, you know, chat with me, and looking forward to, I guess, the episode.
Hey, thanks for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the stories and the perspectives that were shared in this episode. Please share it with a friend whose dating life might need some help. Wink, wink. If you want to connect with me on social media, you can find me on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter @AnEpiffWithTiff. I really hope to see you there. There are multiple ways that you can support my show. You can pray for me, rate, review, and share any episode that you love. Or you can even financially contribute by going to patreon.com/anepiphanywithtiffany. Until next time, I'm Tiffany, and I hope you just had an epiphany.